And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Awesome Mania as Ben and I are going over WrestleMania. We just finished up not that long ago, night number one, and is now time for night number two. Ben, you were talking...
You should have said night number three and really confused anyone that was listening.
All right, we're talking about night number three. But
it doesn't work.
I know. But
God damn it, Mike.
But there was something that we were talking about during our little break.
Yeah.
And that you wanted to talk about the opening package.
Yeah, I was kind of sad we didn't talk about the opening promo package. I know a lot of people who kind of smack talk the opening promo package. And yes, just because you point out that you're a bad Jack Sparrow impersonator doesn't make you not a bad Jack Sparrow impersonator. I just found the opening promo package funny.
It really was.
Seth Rollins curb stomping a giant crab. And what was the other one? I think it was Drew McIntyre, Claymore kicking a Kraken.
Yeah, I liked I also liked how it also didn't take itself seriously at the same time in a way.
Yes, that was it kind of set the tone for WrestleMania. It's why I was glad I wanted to talk about it a little bit, is because a lot of people have given people slack, heck, for even doing WrestleMania in the first place, right? I don't think you speak to a single person who's watched the event who isn't glad it happened. It's just a little bit of escapism for a couple of nights. Not once did they mention the pandemic. Not once did they mention COVID. Not once did they mention like the shelter at home, right? Yeah. They would talk about the weird circumstances in the world, but they wouldn't say the words, and it was much, much needed.
Yeah,
and the levity in this opening promo package was just right for me.
Yeah, and it's actually funny that you bring that up, because one of my friends who was watching WrestleMania during night one, he actually texted me during the Boneyard match.
Yeah,
and he's like, how are you able to watch this is so stupid? And I'm like, it's entertainment, just turn your brain off and just watch it and have fun.
Yeah,
you know, that's the point of why they did this, to have us turn off our brains and just go, fuck what's going on in the real world right now. Let's just be entertained, because there's not a lot of new content like this right now to entertain us.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing we realistically have right now is professional wrestling with new content.
Yeah.
And that's reality. And, you know, sure, you think that watching a match in an empty arena is stupid and that you just can't get into it. That's fine. But like, as Ben and I talked about in that first essential hour, I'm talking about night one.
Yeah.
Watch what the wrestlers are doing. They're doing something to keep you engaged. They're building a story without a crowd, and they're doing it good for the most part.
And I know that I'm probably not number one, because we were speaking on we had a Zoom hangout with us and our friend Jordan Jordan's friend when we did some of the
Jamie, I think it was.
Yeah, Jamie, when we did the wrestling thing. And after we went off the air, we got to talking about the current state of wrestling. And I've voiced the opinion I've preferred pro wrestling without a crowd. Because I prefer the intimacy, but
yeah,
I prefer the promos it's brought us, that kind of thing.
Well, so. Not only that, but the other thing that you also said is that you don't have a crowd hijacking it.
Yeah.
You know, especially like, and we talked about this on the last episode, how like they're not hijacking promos specifically. Yeah. Also, one other thing that we didn't bring up that was, I think it was only shown on night one, it wasn't shown on night two, was the America the Beautiful.
Sure.
And actually, I just want to say, I liked how they did that.
They did show a little bit of it on night two on the intro to the Firefly Funhouse match.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't think they had it like where they opened the show with
didn't.
It.
They didn't.
But I just want to say that I actually liked it. I liked how they used the past people who sung it at past WrestleManias, like Aretha Franklin, Ray Charles, Little Richard, Willie Nelson, you know.
The good thing about the WWE Network is they have the rights to that.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Yeah, they have the rights to it. But I think it was also a nice little touch.
Yeah.
Of like also paying tribute to those who, you know, have done past WrestleManias and having a way of putting them on.
Big shout out to my wife. She just brought me delicious coffee.
But yeah, so that I just wanted to throw that out there real quick, since we're also talking about like opening packages and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But going into the matches, our kickoff show match for night number 2 was Liv Morgan versus Natalya, which would see Liv Morgan pick up the victory over Natalya.
What great little match this was.
It really was. And not only that, but I got to say, this is also a good little boost for Liv.
Yeah.
Especially with how fumbled her return to television was.
Yeah, tying it into the Lana stuff.
Yeah, so like, and then we know that she wrestled Asuka last night on WrestleMania or on Raw and lost. But the thing is, though, is that even though she lost looking strong to Asuka, because she was able to take it to Asuka in ways that Asuka didn't imagine she would have.
Yeah.
So this is
just actually, like Walter at Survivor Series.
Just like the Eva Marie fan club, ain't it?
Hey, man, if you say stupid stuff, I ain't letting you live it down.
I know. But the thing is, though, is that one way or the other, though, this is a good little mini launch pad for Liv Morgan.
Yeah, Byron was saying something, and I'm going to piggyback off what you're saying about launch pads. Byron was saying something on Raw last night, which was this... The Raw WrestleMania and the Raw after WrestleMania are good launching points for superstars to like restart the way people look at them, right? Especially this year, where you weren't going to get a whole bunch of like surprises at the Raw after WrestleMania, right? So this is a really good way to start the year off for Liv. And again, we'll talk about this on more about this on Saturday, because I really want to talk about this on Saturday, which is the fact that Apollo Crews and Aleister Black went 30 minutes on Raw.
Yeah.
And Apollo Crews looked great.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, it's a good little launch pad, especially for somebody who had been fumbled while keeping them on TV through the fumbling.
Yeah.
Which, good on Liv for weathering that storm for the last several months.
Yeah.
So, like, this is a good start. And I'm happy for that, because we were hoping for good things for Liv when she returned, and then she just got kind of thrown into the dumpster fire of the Lana storyline.
Yeah.
So, good for Liv. Now to kick off the main card, you have the NXT Women's Championship between Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair.
Yep.
Which would also see history, as the NXT Women's Championship would become the first NXT title to be defended in the history of WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. So big thing. This wasn't a bad match. This was a really good, solid match.
Very good, solid match.
I liked the Dragon Ball Z themed gear by Rhea Ripley.
I didn't know what it was.
I didn't find out until yesterday.
I was just like, oh, she's wearing white.
Yeah.
That's unusual for her.
Yeah, apparently it's, I think it's Vegeta and Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
So.
Come on, Mike, it's Vegeta.
I don't watch that show.
Neither do I.
but yeah, so really great matchup between these two. Loved the ring psychology in this match, especially by Charlotte working the leg of Ripley. And ended up seeing Charlotte Flair becoming a two-time NXT Women's Champion and the first time she's won the NXT Women's title since, I believe, 2014?
At the time, I really disagreed with the result here.
Yeah.
However, it's come out since, aka about
5 hours ago,
that Rhea's work visa has expired. She's having to return to Australia, which kind of explains the result.
Yeah. The other thing that kind of also explains the result too is that they wanted to have Charlotte, who's still considered a Raw superstar, might I add.
Yep.
Be on NXT every week to help in the quote-unquote Wednesday night war against AEW. But however, they do have Rhea Ripley factored in the NXT women's title plans.
Yeah.
Pretty much immediately. It's just, as Ben mentioned, if she's had to go back to Australia because her work visa is expired, obviously yep. certain things are going to be on hold. But
even if they got the visa in place today, quarantines and shit like that means she won't be back for a month or two.
Yeah. So whatever booking they have planned for her,
yeah,
it's going to be there when she comes back. But overall, great match. And a good start to night number two as well.
For sure.
Going into match number two, you have Aleister Black versus Bobby Lashley. I love Aleister Black.
Me too.
So much.
The end to this match was fantastic.
Yeah.
However, it is quite clear that the only reason this match was put on the card was to start the split up of Bobby Lashley and Lana.
Yeah.
Because Bobby Lashley dominating Aleister Black through a bunch of the match. He gets him up for the Dominator. And Lana's like, put him down. Give him the spear. End it. Just kill him. Puts him down. Goes for the spear. Runs back into the Black Mass. 1, 2, 3. And Lana is looking
dumb shocked.
No, she's not looking dumb shocked. She looks like she's going to jump in the ring and murder Bobby Lashley personally. And then there was an interview with Bobby Lashley backstage. Charlie's like, what was that out there? And Bobby Lashley goes, maybe a case for the fact that I need new management or a new wife.
Yeah. So it was,
they went through all that of breaking up Rusev and Lana and Rusev Day. And
yeah, I
throw it away less than a year later. Oh.
Yeah, I
follow through, you cowards.
I wasn't as enthusiastic about this match. Like the big draw
for me. No, not at all.
Yeah, but the big draw for me for this match was Aleister Black.
Yeah.
I want to see Aleister do his thing. And like we got a solid matchup because we knew what Bobby's capable of.
Kicked Bobby like if you watch the replay, Bobby's going like full pelt in and Aleister Black just kicks him in the head. Just full on like
I think Bobby Lashley's head flew off during that
kick.
But
the interesting thing is Bobby Lashley pulled a Hulk Hogan where he kicked out right after the three. Right? It
was, yeah. So, yeah. See, and here's the thing, and I actually said this in my thing on the website, is that to me, you know, I definitely feel that the better of the two talent went over, and that was Black.
Yeah.
And it's nothing personal against Lashley. I think he's a great worker in the ring. The problem is that he's, you know, you've said this about Humberto Carrillo. He's a vacuum when it comes to charisma. And it's kind of the same thing with Bobby Lashley. He doesn't have a persona to him.
So Nia Jax came back on Raw last night.
Yeah.
And I was on Zoom with Jordan at the time. And I went, ah, great. He's like, what? I'm like, well, the charisma in the room just fell because someone's sucking it all up. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, Nia Jax is back. And he's like, yeah.
But the thing is,
charismaless fucking vacuum that she is.
But I've noticed it's like, and it's nothing against Lashley because he is a good wrestler and stuff like that. It's just that Black has a much more unique gimmick and skill set that makes me want to see him, especially as a champion in the near future.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. I don't want to, fine. Give us Lashley versus Lesnar. We know that's a match.
Don't.
You know, just give us that 3-minute match. You know, that's our piss break in the future. But, you know.
Don't pay either of them more money.
But yeah, so going on, match number 3 is Otis versus Dolph Ziggler.
Right, so I'm not going to lie to you. This is the match I was actually most interested in seeing tonight. Because I was wondering how they were going to fuck it up.
Yeah.
I've gone on record as saying I feel like they kind of fucked up this storyline, right? And they didn't just fuck it up once. They fucked it up twice. Right?
Yeah.
So first, the first way they fucked it up was at Elimination Chamber. Because at Elimination Chamber, Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler should have won the tag titles. Right?
Yeah.
Then they should have built to WrestleMania where Tucky and Otis challenge for the tag titles. And at the end of the match, Mandy finds out what she found out on SmackDown last week, turns on Dolph Ziggler, someone distracts the ref, she hits him right in the ziggly puffs, and Otis and that win the titles, and Otis gets the girl, and there you go, right?
Right in the ziggly puffs.
Right in the ziggly puffs, right?
Hashtag ziggly puffs.
Hashtag Octlethorpe ziggly puffs.
Yeah, no, and I agree.
The second way they fucked it up was on SmackDown last week, because they didn't go the route that I said. They went a route where they went towards a singles match with Otis and Dolph. Fine. No problem. Don't reveal that Sonya was behind it before WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Right? Because that way, when Mandy appears at WrestleMania, you already know what's going to happen. Okay? What you do is you have Otis and Ziggler in the ring, and Ziggler is accompanied to ringside by Sonya and Mandy. And it's all the 3-on-1 because Tucky's taken out of the equation. At which point, you have the Hacker show up at WrestleMania, show the footage, slap, distraction, ziggly puffs, slam, win, get the girl, right?
Yep.
Instead,
they did it.
Suffice to say, they managed to not fuck it up more.
Yeah. Well, and here's what I wrote about the match. I wrote that it's a predictable match with a storyline that's been screwed up for weeks now.
Yeah.
Ziggler takes it to Otis for a while, but when Otis turns it around, Sonya Deville plays the distraction so Ziggler can hit a low blow. However, Mandy Rose comes out and takes out Deville, then low blows Ziggler in the ziggly puffs to allow Otis to get the win and the woman. That is literally what was essentially waiting for that happen the entire time because of what happened on SmackDown at that point.
Yeah.
You know, if they'd gone with your booking way, we would have had like that a better element of surprise, kind of like WrestleMania 20, Chris Jericho versus Christian with Trish Stratus. You know, the entire time Trish was in Jericho's corner, and then at the very end of the match, Trish just slaps Jericho to find out that she was really with Christian the entire time.
Yep,
it's like how like you could have just redone that storyline and made it work.
Yeah,
in a way. You know, it's like I said about night one with like Styles and Taker, with the whole Shawn Taker storyline. With the right people, you can rehash storylines a certain way. This is one of those that you could have done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, match number 4, the last man standing match between Edge and Randy Orton. This match had a lot of grit to it. I will say that.
So apparently this match has pissed off some people in WWE.
Yeah, because of the thing in the weight room with the handle thing.
Yeah, apparently it was too much, like when Chris Benoit hung himself.
Yeah, and apparently, like, you know, and the irony is that it was 2 weeks removed from when that episode aired on Vice of Dark Side of the Ring, where they chronicled the entire Benoit story.
I didn't see it. I didn't get that.
Yeah. So
I just saw that was the least effective thing they could have done to each other in a weight room.
Yeah.
They should have been throwing weights at each other.
But holy
great moment to begin this match, where Randy's been posing as a cameraman the whole time. Makes me wonder if he'd been there the whole night.
That would be so great if he was.
And like, I need to go back and watch to see if he's in any of the other matches.
Like, could you imagine if, like, he was the one filming the women's tag team match?
That was the night before.
I know, but still. But, like, could you imagine if he just stayed kayfabe the entire time? Like, he was just there as a camera guy.
There's actually a moment in this, and there's a moment in this match where they go backstage and they actually knock over a cameraman.
Yeah.
Right? I had no problem with that.
But that was also because it was in confined space.
Well, there was a bit of that, but also it added to the fact that they were so focused on each other, right? And it added to the realism of what was going on. Yeah. Whereas in the arena, it didn't make any sense to me during the women's tag title match. Yeah. I know it's completely hypocritical, right? But the fact that, like, they knocked the camera out and they stayed on that camera angle, it was really good. It was very effective. Whereas the one that happened during the women's title match looked like a botch.
Yeah. And you're right, because I remember watching it live with the women's tag and going, that was a fuck up right there. But then, yeah, with that, it's like confined space. That cameraman was going to get hit regardless whether he tried to get out of the way or not. So, but one of the detractors that a lot of people said was that this match went on too long. How do you feel about the length of the match?
I'm...
Because it didn't bother me, honestly.
I had no problem with it either.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people said that the match dragged on too long, and like,
of all the matches that went long, this one felt like it earned it.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't going long because they were doing rest holds and things. It was going long because they were selling and they were moving through the arena and trying to kill each other in various and interesting ways.
I loved the meeting room, the conference room.
If you say the spot where Edge climbed on the cage on the top, on the roof, I'm going to disown you.
No. Well, I liked the fact that they actually had caging up there, though. Like, that was interesting. It's like, welcome to hell in a conference room or something like that. But I also liked how, you know, they used all these different environments in different ways. Like, the weight room was used in a different way, like how Edge was able to pull him up and then he swung himself onto Randy in the chair, and how actually Randy did go for a weight to try to hit Edge with, but Edge did the sling to kick the weight into Orton. And then you have the thing like in another backstage, you know, the thing in the conference room, the thing in the like in that backstage area where they put Randy for the table. And then, like, the culmination on top of a fucking 18-wheeler. Like, on top of a fucking truck, man. Like, what?
I was kind of hoping for a bit more when they went into the storage area. I was kind of hoping for them to, like, knock open a storage case and find, like, the rated R spinner belt. Or...
That's all up in Connecticut, though.
Yeah, but they could have... put replicas there, like,
yeah,
or find like an old Rated RKO t-shirt, or like they would so they. Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, there's so much little nostalgia. Like, you could have had the tag team titles that they both held, yeah, and you could add one say Edge and one say Randy Orton on the other. Like, there could have been more Easter eggs, definitely. Yeah. But I think at the end of the day, what we got was still great. And I love how the match ended the way this entire feud started, which was with a concerto.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I will say it made me nervous the entire time they're on top of the truck. So, like, because that's a very narrow, like, we're talking about a narrow space where the cameraman got taken out. Yeah. That's a narrow space to work on. And if you fall off or slip, you're falling a good 20 feet.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was I was thoroughly enjoyed that one.
Yeah, it was a very good match. Probably the second best match of the weekend for me, behind KO Seth. So.
Yeah. Match number 5, the Street Profits versus Angel Garza and Austin Theory for the Raw Tag Team titles. In a way, kind of a bit of a predictable result of the Street Profits winning.
Yeah.
I couldn't really see Austin Theory and Angel Garza winning this match. But we would see Bianca Belair come out on behalf of the Street Profits, because after the match was over, they would attack the Profits and Zelina Vega would get involved.
Bianca Belair is now confirmed to be on Raw.
Yep.
So,
and also, I really, really, really need to say this, and I said this in the blog post recap in the show, but Montez Ford has WWE Champion written all over him. Like, yeah. No, like, even with an empty crowd in that match, he was the most hyped up person in that match.
Right, but we know how I feel about people who are hype.
Well, okay. When I say hype, I'm not talking about like the Mojo Rawley hype train BS. I'm talking about this guy is excited to be here. He's excited to be in the ring. He's excited to be in this match. And you can tell that he is going to put everything into this match. That's the type of hype that I'm talking about. And he's energetic, and he has like that it thing that you just can't put your finger on.
Yeah, you can definitely say he's got an it factor, but don't say he's hype.
Yeah, but
that classes him in with Mojo, and no one wants that.
Okay, fine. Take away the hype thing. He has it.
He has it. Yeah,
he has it. I see future WWE champion with this guy.
But there are a lot of people who had it.
Yeah, and there are guys who had it 11 years ago and had to wait a while, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I think this was a kind of a predictable result. I didn't see, especially the fact that they're not officially confirming what they're going to do with both Angel Garza and Austin Theory, because they're both still considered as NXT talent. Yeah.
Even though they had a rematch for the Raw tag.
I know.
So we'll talk about it on Saturday. We'll talk about it on Saturday. We'll talk about it on Saturday.
Match number 6 is the Fatal 5-Way Elimination Match for the SmackDown Women's Championship, featuring Bayley defending against Sasha, Tamina, Lacey Evans, and Naomi. To give you the order of eliminations, first it would be Tamina after a group effort. Then Bayley and Sasha would team up on Naomi to eliminate her. However, due to miscommunication, Lacey Evans would eliminate Sasha Banks. And then Bayley and Evans would face off, only to have Bayley retain her title after Banks would factor in the final result by attacking Evans to give Bayley the victory.
And yeah, they're building to Bayley Sasha, right? They got to be at this point.
Yeah. This is the beginning of the seeds planting for, I think, earliest SummerSlam. But if they want to try to go for the full year build, then they can try to stretch at the Mania, but I expect it at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a bad match.
Wasn't a good match.
Yeah. It was a decent match.
It happened.
Like, it had its highlights in certain things, like when everyone recognized that Tamina was the one they had to take out first because she was the bigger of the five. And it was interesting how they started, where you had like the face, like Naomi and Lacey, the faces go after Tamina first. They get thrown off. Then Bayley and Sasha go after her. Then they get thrown off. And then all four work her, you know. So like stuff like that, that's good, you know, storytelling in that essence right there. But like, there wasn't a lot that made you care about this match either at the same time.
No.
So.
I am sad to say that this was my pee break match for night two.
Yeah.
Mainly because the first two eliminations were kind of predictable. So. I really needed to pee.
But yeah, so Bayley's still your champion. Which then brings us to the Firefly Funhouse match, to which I enjoyed it for the pure spectacular of what the hell did I just watch?
Firefly Funhouse? Is that what was next?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also, we'll get to this, but the post-match was brilliant.
The post-match was pitch perfect.
But actually, real quick, before we get to that...
The post-match should have been the last thing we saw on WrestleMania.
But let's throw this out there real quick. Before we actually talk about this match, let's talk about Gronk and the 24/7 title real quick.
Right. Do we have to?
Real fast, because it explains why we have the post-match thing that we have.
Right. But...
So, super quick.
But that involves us talking about Gronk.
Yeah.
And I just want him to fuck off.
Yeah. So, let's put it in perspective like this. Gronk is now your 24/7 champion. As a result of that, Titus O'Neil became the de facto host of WrestleMania.
Yeah, good for Titus.
Which is good for... Titus is amazing on the mic. I've always loved him on the mic.
There are some times he's not been so great.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. But he's an entertaining guy. Let's put it like that.
Yes.
So let's talk about the Firefly Funhouse.
Well, no, let's go back to Gronk for a minute.
Okay.
Here's what I don't think WWE understand. Literally no one outside of America gives a single solitary fuck about the Gronk.
Yeah.
You're not drawing in extra viewers anywhere else around the world by bringing him in. And when you did bring him in, you had him cut awkward promo after awkward promo after awkward promo on a pre-recorded show. Fuck's sake.
Yeah. But this also raised some questions, though, in this regards. Because Mojo ran out to the ring area, followed by several NXT superstars, which then Gronk jumped off the balcony thing onto all of them. To which then he got the 24/7 title and ran off. The thing that got a lot of people questioning, and this was also exposed in a way in the Edge-Orton match, was the number of people in the building.
Yeah.
Because obviously the social distancing guidelines is like no more than 10 people in a group and stuff like that. And obviously with this segment that they did for the 24/7 title, had a lot more than 10 people there.
Yeah.
So there was some ire.
It also depends on when they filmed it.
That's true.
Because if they filmed it before the shelter-in-place stuff went in place.
Oh, no. Everything was definitely filmed before the shelter-in-place, but the 10-person thing was way before the filming thing.
Okay.
So that's the thing. So I can understand the ire towards that segment per se, and actually in a way during the Edge Randy Orton match.
If you think that the ire towards that segment came from the lack of social distancing, you're an idiot.
I know.
It comes from the fact that Gronk is 24/7 champion. Yeah. He is the stupidest 24/7 champion of all time. This is a title that has been held by Santa Claus. Fuck that guy.
But anyways, so that's why Titus O'Neil is now the guest, is now the host of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
So moving on, the Firefly Funhouse match.
Can we stop calling it a match?
Yes. So it was not a match. This was actually more of a movie.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. And
we should stop calling the Boneyard match a match as well, because there was no referee.
Yeah. But there was a fight, at least, in that
one. Yes. But and this is what we're going to get to, right? Was I entertained? Yes. Was it impressive for the way it broke down Cena's career? Yes. Blah, 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 blah. At the end of the day, imagine being a young John Cena fan growing up and being like, man, can't wait to see what Cena's done at WrestleMania this year. Oh, John Cena's going to have a match. I'm going to buy the pay-per-view or pay for WWE Network or whatever. And then you get a 13-minute promo.
Yeah, and I can understand that disappointment. But from an entertainment standpoint, we're still good. Like,
sure.
But so you actually brought up a thing about how it like kind of chronicles Cena's career.
Yeah, it broke down his fear of failure.
Yeah, and it was really cool because first off, I loved seeing Cena in his original gear when they debuted. Uh-huh. That was kind of like a nice little throwback. But like somebody actually broke this down in the order of how it was shown in the cinematic.
I mean, it was pretty fucking obvious.
Yeah, but like, but
especially especially the moment where Bray sung Nikki Bella's entrance music.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is like I'm going to take this person's breakdown. So for those who,
in other words, this is Mike's attempt to sound real clever because he didn't figure it out on his own.
I figured it out, but somebody wrote it out, so I'm utilizing what they wrote.
Uh huh.
But so this is essentially for those who may not have followed Cena's career. This is why we're going to do it. So this was about Cena's failures or things he's afraid of.
No, it wasn't.
His debut failure.
Debut didn't fail. Fuck's sake. His even debut was not a failure. His debut, he wrestled Kurt Angle and damn near beat him, and it made him a fucking main roster superstar. His debut was not a failure.
Except for the fact that he almost got fired not that long later.
But it wasn't a failure.
His marriage
failed. It's the single biggest success debut. It's one of the most talked about debuts in the history of wrestling. How is that a failure?
So we could say post-debut failure. Would that be more accurate?
No, this wasn't about his failures. It was about his fear of failure. Do you see the difference?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was his fear about marriage failing.
That's not on him. Nikki did that.
Well, also keep in mind, he was married when he first came to WWE.
That's fair. Yeah.
Okay. His bodybuilding career, which was with the whole Saturday night's main event montage.
Uh-huh.
His fear of thinking he only got to the top because of his size and physique, which is also part of the montage thing.
Right, but we know that's not true.
Yeah.
Because if he only got to the top because of his size and physique, how would he go down as one of the best promo men of all time?
Yeah.
And if you don't think he is, you're fucking stupid.
Yeah, which would be the next thing, which would be his rap career not taking off.
Yeah, he only had one incredibly successful album.
Yeah, but he didn't have anything else post.
Who cares?
Yeah.
How many successful rap albums have you had, Mike?
None. But the
exactly.
I think
exactly.
But the, I think this one doesn't detail it better compared to one that I also another one that I read. But the thing about the rapping was about him burying people, and how it upset people in the locker room about how he would just openly bury people in his raps.
Right, but that's not his rap career.
Yeah,
that's his in-ring promos.
Yeah,
and believe it or not, when you're a heel, you're supposed to bury your opponent.
Yeah. Well, and they are also upset that he was doing it as a face to other faces, but that's besides the point. His fear of failing being a heel, which explains the NWO.
But he didn't. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It does not to describe the end. It does not justify him. And the NWO thing was just fucking shock factor.
Yeah.
Him as a heel, there is no... John Cena didn't fail as a heel. He was a very successful heel.
I think it's more about being the heel after being the face for so long. I think that was the fear.
That doesn't make sense, though.
Yeah. Like, because originally, because remember, he was supposed to go heel against The Rock, and he was supposed to have a whole... a tire change and everything, and then they just scrapped it because they're like, no, it's not the right thing to do.
They scrapped it because the crowd turned on The Rock.
Yeah. And they noticed that too, yeah.
They didn't scrap it because Cena couldn't do it. And this is what I'm talking about. Is this breakdown you're reading doesn't understand what it's talking about. It has the vague ideas right. Because I saw the same breakdown, right? So go back to the beginning, right? The first one, debut. showing up as the prototype, right?
Yeah.
He didn't fail in that debut. That is still one of the most talked about debuts in history. What came after it might have been a failure. But it was the fear of failure on that night, yeah. Right? Going into bodybuilding. He was worried he wouldn't make it in the bodybuilding world. What was the next point they make?
Only being on the top because of his size and physique.
Okay. We know that's not true. But again, it's the fear, not the truth of that. It's the fear of that. The fear of if his promos were taken away, if his physique was taken away, could he still go? Right? Yeah. What was next?
Rap.
Okay, he had a successful rap career. He launched a successful rap album. It sold millions. It was in the top 10 of the fucking Billboard charts, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Just because people backstage couldn't keep up with him on the microphone, he was worried, again, fear. It's not actual failure.
Yeah. And then it
because
was...
that. The core of the fiend is fear, not actual punishment. It feeds on fear. It fed on Daniel Bryan's fear. It fed on Seth Rollins' fear. It feeds on Bray Wyatt's fear.
Yeah. And then the next one, there's two more on here.
Yeah.
His fear of hitting Bray with that chair at WrestleMania 30, and his fear of wrestling fans hating him for destroying the Nexus, which was referenced when he was seen punching Huskus the Pig.
I don't get the Huskus the Pig thing at all.
Husky Harris. Even though
Husky Harris was mentioned in the rap.
Yeah. And then the last one, his fear of retiring.
Again, like, the fear of hitting Bray Wyatt with a chair, right? Weird, because he hit him with the fucking ring steps later in the match.
Yeah. Well, people seem to forget that bit.
Well, I think
it's the perception of, you know, when he hit Wyatt with the stairs in that match.
Yeah.
That was in the heat of the moment wrestling and fighting each other. Whereas the chair was actually at the very beginning of the match.
He lobbed the ring stairs down the aisle and hit Bray Wyatt in the head.
Oh, that's how he did it? I can't remember that.
Yeah.
But the key thing I remembered was at the beginning of the match, Bray essentially gave Cena a chair and just said, hit me.
Yeah.
And that's the key thing that they're
talking
about.
I know what happened in the match, Mike. I've seen the match.
But
the point is, I don't get the fact that that is the moment that Cena lost or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. I need to look more into that, but like that was the big thing that that Bray put into that. But here's the key thing. We ended up finding out, I think, yesterday, last night, or this morning, who was involved with making this.
Yeah, it was Bray,
Bruce Pritchard, and John Cena.
John Cena.
It was just the three of them.
There was someone else involved, but only as like a producer. They weren't actually on set. I think it was Michael P.S. Hayes.
Yeah, but
was like producer.
Yeah, but Pritchard, Wyatt, and Cena were the key three. Pritchard and Wyatt came up with the majority of everything.
Yeah.
And then Cena kind of came in and changed things here and there for, quote unquote, for the better. Mm-hmm. For the better of the whole thing. Because obviously Cena wasn't going to sign off on certain things that they had ideas on. But like when they said, hey, how would you feel about putting on your debut gear for this thing? And
yeah,
kind of like writing the story, and like Cena's like, okay, I can get down with that. So the fact that that was like a real good team effort between those three guys was nice. And this was obviously the other match that was shot off location. Talk is that this was shot in Connecticut.
At the warehouse.
Because like, not going to lie, it was kind of cool seeing the old SmackDown fist. Yeah. I was like, yeah, boy.
I wasn't a big fan of this. If it had been this that then led into a match, sure. If it had been this sprinkled throughout a match, sure. But to promote a John Cena match and then not have a John Cena match, kind of a dick move.
And honestly, there was something that I saw that was very interesting. It was by somebody who was actually at the pay-per-view in San Jose that had the House of Horrors match with Orton and Wyatt, where that was like a pretty much a pre-taped match between those two guys, and then you had a little bit of a match in the ring, and people were obviously chanting boring and this sucks. And the person said, it's like, when you're watching something like that live in person, it sucks. But watching it on television like that, it's actually good to watch.
I wouldn't call the House Horrors match fun to watch.
Well, you know what I mean, though. Like from the perspective of somebody live in the crowd. Watching,
if they'd have done that in a stadium, then it would have got worse reactions. Yeah.
And that's kind of the point that, like, I'm not saying the House of Horrors match was a good match. I'm just saying that's the comparison.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, no matter how you slice it, they promoted a John Cena match and didn't give us a John Cena match.
Yeah. Post match, quote unquote. When this entire thing was over, it cuts right to Titus O'Neil, who looks so dumbfounded and lost for words. He goes, I don't know what I just saw. Same, Titus. Same.
Yeah, big feels, bro.
But like, and let's be brutally
big
honest.
Big mood.
Let's be brutally honest here. If that was Gronk, that wouldn't have sold as well the way Titus did it. It really wouldn't have. And I'm glad that Titus was in that spot. And that's just yet another a gif or meme that we now have, thanks to Titus O'Neil. So.
I don't think it was very good. I'm going to rephrase that. I don't think it was what I wanted.
Right. From a cinematic standpoint.
But I have come to the realization. I have come to the very real realization. I don't, quote unquote, get the Fiend. Yeah. He's not interesting to me anymore. I don't like spooky dudes in my wrestling right now. Unless it's like comedy spooky dudes like Danhausen or like a PCO over in Ring of Honor or whatever. I don't like the spooky dudes. I don't like the Dark Order. I didn't like the Nightmare Collective. I'm not digging on the Fiend. I just want to watch wrestling, man.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Match-wise, it wasn't a match. Let's just be brutally honest there. But from a cinematic point, were you at least entertained with what they put together?
No. I was sitting there going,
what the fuck is this?
No, I knew, because I knew what it was. Like, I got it instantly what they were going for. Right? But I was just sitting there going, when's the match going to start?
Yeah.
I was sitting there going, okay, I get it. You've made your point. Okay, you get it. You made your point. Okay, you got it. You made your point. We're 3 minutes in. We've got another 10 minutes of this bollocks, but you made your point already.
Now, do you think it's a good way to write off Cena?
No.
That was the last question I had about it. So,
if you're going to write Cena off, you put Cena in a ring with someone young, and you put Cena out on his back. Yep. I don't think that's the right way to write Cena out at all.
All right. And that's a fair sentiment.
Because Bray didn't need it. Imagine it was Austin Theory who put out Cena.
Yeah.
Or an Angel Garza, or a Ricochet, or a Cedric Alexander.
And who knows? Maybe we'll still get that.
I'm just saying, the point being, and this is why we were talking about with Undertaker coming back for Survivor Series against AJ, is if you're going out, you go out on your back.
Yep.
And sure, Cena was on his back at the end of this match, but A, wasn't a fucking match. B, person that put him on his back didn't need it.
Yeah. So with that, we move on to the main event, which we'll add on something about Raw because it relates to this, which is the WWE Championship between Brock Lesnar and Drew McIntyre. First off, another predictable match that we all saw coming, but at the same time, so happy for Drew McIntyre.
Oh, boy. I've been a Drew McIntyre fan since day one. I mean, anyone who knows me knows that, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I was a big fan of his when he left the company, when he went to ICW and a bunch of other promotions as Drew Galloway.
Which, that's his real last name, correct?
Pretty sure.
Yeah.
But, and as much as I'm happy for Drew and Drew, Andrew World Heavyweight. No, bad. Bad joke. As much as I'm happy for him, I was hoping for a better match. I was hoping for an actual match.
Do you think Lesnar's attitude going into this one, because he was originally going to put, I mean, he still did, but he was originally going to do a better match with McIntyre.
You don't know Tampa. That. You don't know that.
Well, that's true. We don't. But the reality is that he probably would have put something out a little bit better in front of an audience. Because as you mentioned in, you know, when we talked about night one, you know, this is a guy who, you know, when he's motivated, you know, he puts on a good match.
When he wants to.
Yeah.
When he's motivated, when he wants to.
Yeah. And I think he wanted to do right with McIntyre.
Then he should have done right with McIntyre and not done 4 minutes and 35 seconds.
Yeah, because, and it's like the thing that I mentioned when we talked about night one, Lesnar was pissed that this was going down the way it was. He wanted it because he wanted it to happen in the arena. He wanted them to delay.
Well, he can't control that. So yeah. Get over your fucking self. You're still getting paid $1 billion and work a fucking match.
Yeah.
Selfish.
Yeah, I know.
But I nearly said a really bad word.
But still the 10-year journey to this moment for McIntyre, four Claymore kicks, and the Scottish psychopath is champ.
Can we not call him the Scottish psychopath? He's literally never called himself that.
Yeah.
He made a point of saying that in the Chronicle. He's like, I never called myself a psychopath.
Oh, that's right. I think he said that when he was introduced for like a media appearance or something like that. Because the guy was like, oh, the Scottish psychopath.
Yeah, it's when he's doing the thing for BBC Radio 1 in England. He's like, I never called myself the sort of psychopath. I don't like it.
But McIntyre's champion. But Ben, talk
about... I would say that there was a great... As much as I don't like the match, the empty arena did leave one moment. And it's just before the final Claymore kick. Drew just looks at Brock and bellows, look me in the eyes, and just kicks his freaking head off. It was great. It was great. It was a great moment.
Oh, it definitely was. But Ben, there is more to this, though. Why don't you talk to the people about what the hell happens?
So,
and this is one of the few times we talk about Raw.
At the beginning of Raw, they're like, last night, Drew McIntyre defeated Brock Lesnar, but it was only the start of a very long night for Drew. And I was like, of course it is. He's Scottish. He's going to go out and drink like 72 bottles of whiskey and have lots of sex with his wife. Right? And the idea that WWE are going to televise that is a little bit weird. But we got to the end of the night, and now we will show you what happened. So it turns out that after WrestleMania went off the air, Drew McIntyre went backstage for 20 minutes, got the plates changed on his title, redid his entrance, and came out to the ring for an interview. Bear in mind the it's everything's still set up as WrestleMania. The sign's up. Titantron's up. Everything's still WrestleMania. And out comes the Big Show with a referee. And I'm just like, oh, fuck. They're going to WrestleMania 9, Drew McIntyre. Hulk Hogan is going to be played by the Big Show. Oh, don't do this, WWE. And it turns out, and I'm 90% sure this didn't actually happen on the same day, but the way they're selling it is that 20 minutes after beating Brock Lesnar in a 4 minutes and 35 second long match, Drew McIntyre proceeded to have like a 7-minute match with the Big Show on the same night. Fortunately, Drew won. Otherwise,
Well, let me ask you something, because yeah, it's a little mind-numbing that they did it, but you know, I had some time to think about it today. Do you think that they did this as a way to kind of go, yeah, the match with Lesnar was kind of weak, so let's feed him the Big Show?
But they didn't feed him the Big Show. The Big Show kicked the shit out of him for 6 minutes,
yeah. And
he hit a Claymore kick, and that was it.
Mm.
They didn't feed him anything. And on top of that, if they were going to do that, they should have put this match on WrestleMania.
Yeah. But I don't know what the logic is behind it. But like maybe they wanted to give Drew a quick defense to...
Then just...
Yeah.
Just...
I don't know.
You guys can't see right now, but I'm face palming
with his hat over his eyes.
Like, then just have Big Show turn up in the first segment of Raw, challenge Drew to a fight, and then have the fight in the main event.
Yeah.
It's exactly basically what happened. Just filmed different.
Yeah, and yeah, it's weird. That's all I can say. I don't understand the booking behind it. I don't understand the logic behind it. But Drew's still champion. That's the important thing.
I was so worried they were just going to WrestleMania 9 Drew. I was going to be like, you're so close to having me interested in Raw. You're so close to having me interested. Don't fuck it up. And of all people, Big Show, right? Big Show comes out and he cuts this promo and he's like, I'm here to Drew, you're champion. And Drew's like, I know what you're trying to do, Show. You're trying to goad me into a fight for the title. But I just beat Brock Lesnar 20 minutes ago, right? And Big Show flubs his lines a bit and goes like, hey, I'm not here to challenge you to a WWE Championship match. Bear in mind, this was pre-recorded. And he flubs his lines. He says, I'm not here to challenge you to WWE Championship match. I'm not even here to challenge you to WWE Championship match at Money in the Bank. So why did they end up having a WWE Championship match? But Drew's just like, no, I'm not going to fight you. I just fought Brock Lesnar 20 minutes ago. And everyone's like, oh, it made him look like a bit of a wimp. And I'm like, why? What if he'd said, no, you haven't earned a title shot. You've been gone for 9 months. What about that?
But I do agree with this one tweet. Big Show's show just hit Netflix.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Big Show's show just hit Netflix. So we got to feature him on TV. So therefore, let's have him have his 4 millionth heel turn and have him say the word shit on air.
Yep. So.
Because that's a great way to promote a sitcom.
Yeah. But. So, at the end of the day, that's probably the real reason why they did it. Like, his show debuted on Netflix.
Again.
Yeah.
Again. Sure. But don't set it up to be WrestleMania 9. Yeah. One of the single most hated things in the history of your company.
Yep.
Just saying.
Yep. But so with that, we've gone through both nights of WrestleMania.
What were your overall thoughts? Come on.
So overall, I felt that in a way, night one was better than night two for me.
Yep.
I felt like there was more consistency throughout the night, and there wasn't as much predictability on a lot of stuff, whereas night two, you kind of knew some of the stuff was going to happen, like the Street Profits retaining and McIntyre winning, and you know, some of the other stuff was kind of a little predictable. But for me, night one was the night. I definitely enjoyed the Boneyard match. That was very enjoyable, and I liked what they did with Undertaker and AJ and everything like that. Yeah. But definitely match of the weekend, hands down, Owens versus Rollins.
Yes, yeah, by far.
Hands down. I am right there with you on that. With Edge versus Randy Orton in the Last Man Standing match, a very close second. I don't want to put the Boneyard match in that realm because technically it wasn't really a match.
Remember when I said how cool it would be if they filmed all of WrestleMania
as a movie?
Like a fucking movie?
Yeah.
Look at the Boneyard match.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was really cool. And not only that, but like also for night one, like I said, the consistency of how the night went, like it had a good flow to it for the first night, and that's one of the reasons why I like night one over night two.
Yeah, night one had a lot more uncertainty to it as well.
Yeah. So.
Overall, I was thoroughly sports entertained overall. There were a few
missteps. There were a few booking decisions I would change. One of which, it comes out in hindsight, was kind of taken out of their hands, which I can't complain with, really. I would have rebooked Shayna Becky. And I would have, again, the way that they did it is the only way I could accept Undertaker beating AJ.
Yeah.
And just the plaintive cries of, don't bury me, man. Don't bury me. Says everything you need to know about how AJ felt in that moment.
But yeah, it was, I agree with you. I was very sports entertained. That was the whole point of the weekend. And having Stephanie McMahon come out for like the first like 45, 50, you know, for 45 seconds to a minute to just do like a little intro. That's all you needed, was just a tiny little intro. And, you know, to just say, we're here to entertain you. And they did that. 100% they did that.
For sure.
And whether you hated it or you loved it or you're
in, it's crazy to think. All I'll say is this. It's crazy to think. In a year where the two main title matches went 7 minutes 45 seconds total, where the Raw Women's title match went under 9 minutes, it is crazy to think we're about a year removed from Kofi Mania. We're about a year removed from the ladies' main eventing.
Weird what happens to in
go,
a year.
To go a year and then got the garbage that we got for title matches this year from the two main titles. Yeah. When you tell me that in a women's, out of the two women's titles matches, Tamina will be involved in the better match, I'm going to call you a liar.
Wait, who said that the SmackDown women's match was the better of the three women's title
matches? I did.
Oh.
Of the two women's title matches. Mm. I'm not including the NXT title match.
Okay.
I'm talking about Raw and SmackDown. You're going to tell me Tamina was involved in the match that was the better of the two matches? I'm gonna call you a fucking liar. But it happened.
Yep. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back on Saturday with our regularly scheduled episode. We'll talk with our we'll be talking Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW, Dynamite, The Edge 24 documentary.
We are definitely gonna be talking The Edge 24 documentary. And the Drew Chronicle.
Yep, and the Drew Chronicle. So, and also any various news and notes that may come up between now and then.
Which means you've got 3 days to actually watch those, Mike.
Well, I've watched Chronicle.
Okay, okay.
I just haven't watched Edge yet. I was saving that for Friday night. That was my Friday night viewing for me.
You're not going to be watching SmackDown?
I can watch it before SmackDown, and I can watch it after SmackDown. SmackDown's only from 8 to 10, man. And I get home around like 6:30-ish sometimes, so it depends. Well, it depends on what errands I have to run on Friday after work, because I get off at 6. But
yeah,
but yeah, there's always after SmackDown, too, because it's an hour, like, what, hour 15?
There is no after SmackDown, man. There is only more SmackDown. At least that's how it's felt the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. But so with that, Ben, where can the people find you on the social medias?
You can find me at Bob T Goldfish on the Twitter. You can find the channel at the channel that we usually record these on. We've not done the last couple. The twitch.tv/321_TV. You'll find more about that at 321 Podcast on TV, on Twitter. And I think that's about it for me.
All right. And find me on Twitter at...
Oh,
at,
and you can find me on Powered Orcs.
Yes, tomorrow. And this past Sunday.
Like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
In what might be the most controversial episode of Powered Orcs yet.
Also, for me, you can find me on Twitter at @TheLindenBaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/X75Productions. And, of course, everything for me is also on TXHDHockey.com, including this podcast of TXHDHockey.com/AwesomeMania. And you can listen to Ben on the episodes of Power Dorks at TXHDHockey.com/Power-Dorks. Make sure you click on the first season of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers to go to that archive for that.
The episodes I'm on are Dark Warrior, and tomorrow will be
Switching Places.
Switching Places.
Yep. So. And with that, Ben, take us out.
That's right. It's me, Ben Taylor, a.k.a. Sleazy Nugget. And guys, gals, and online pals, the words of the 16th president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. Party on, non-gender-specific honorifics.
And until next time, when we're actually allowed in the venue, we will see you ringside.
Peace!